Blog Talk Radio.
Son of a bitch. What's up, everybody? I bushwhacked my face. What a funny word. I don't know if I've ever used that word before in my life. Bushwhacked. That word was definitely underutilized during the Bush administration. We could have used that word like every day for a variety of different reasons. So I was fucking around on Twitter yesterday, and I was asking people, should I, glasses, no glasses, keep the scruff, get rid of the scruff, how exactly should I do this? Answers were all over the place, but I had already shaved at the time I asked, so I think it was probably majority continue with my man-child scruff face, which is weird. I must admit, I think it's weird that you guys thought that was not weird-looking, but the glasses are still off. So at least I fulfilled one of the two popular demand things. Anyway, random side note, but got a lot of great stuff to talk about today, man. We're going to be joined at the top, what is it, the top of the hour? Or is it the top of the next hour? We're going to be joined at 5. How's that? Keep it simple. By somebody who we talked to before. The video is up on YouTube if you haven't listened to it yet. His name's Joshua Turner. He's a former neo-Nazi skinhead who is reformed. And he explained in the last interview exactly how it is that he got reformed. We'll touch on that today. And he also has a great announcement about this new project that he's undertaking to help other people who might be in a similar situation. So I'm really looking forward to that. That should be good. We also have, I'll give you a quick little rundown here, what you have to look forward to. We have Senator Mark Kirk, the Republican of Illinois. Is basically not hiding anymore his corruption. He was like, yeah, here's the person I'm going to hire for my staff now, a lobbyist. And I'm not even going to like pretend like I'm hiring somebody because they give a shit about government. I'm just going to hire somebody specifically for the purpose of doing corrupt shit. I'm going to kick it off with that story in a second. Then we got Donald Rumsfeld, who's like, yeah, the whole Iraq thing, we were lying all along. I didn't believe in the prospect of giving Iraq democracy. We'll discuss that. We have Jeb Bush has zero love for single mothers. In fact, he wants to take the opposite approach. He wants everybody to shame single mothers. He thinks that'll work to create less single mothers. Yeah, I'm sure it will. Pat Robertson answered some viewer emails on his show, and more or less, he basically said, hey, it's okay that your baby died because maybe your baby was going to be the next Hitler. Oh, these guys, do they think before they talk? I mean, I would be mortified to say any of the shit that they say. Like, do you not realize how dumb you sound to everybody? All right, let's get started here. And like I said, I'll kick it off with some corruption. Senator Mark Kirk is a Republican of Illinois, and he recently hired a guy named Sam Mahler to work on his staff. Now, the reason why this is noteworthy is that it highlights the problem of what's called the revolving door in politics, and more specifically, it's the revolving door between Wall Street and Washington. So this guy Mahler is a lobbyist from Fidelity Investments, and he's basically totally entrenched in trying to get special deals for Wall Street. I mean, that's his job. That's exactly what he was supposed to do. So you might think now, well, why is it that Mark Kirk hired him? Why is it that a politician hired him when he was a lobbyist? And why is it that this guy would accept a huge pay cut to leave his lobbying job, which is the better job financially, in order to work in government? Is it because now all of a sudden this guy cares about doing the right thing for his country? Please. Huffington Post explains, quote, Mueller lobbied against a key new Department of Labor rule requiring investment advisors to manage investment accounts in the best interests of their clients rather than their own. The rule prohibits investment companies from steering retirees into holdings based on fees or other perks that accrue to the advisors. These kickbacks cost American savers a combined $17 billion a year. So understand that. We're talking about a rule here that was for the American people, which made it so that you can't have private companies do outwardly corrupt shit where they only steer you towards certain types of financial decisions based on how rich they'll get. $17 billion a year this cost the American people because they were basically given bad advice by financial advisors, and more specifically, selfish advice, where the financial advisors know they're benefiting themselves over their clients. $17 billion the American people lost because of bad financial advisors. This guy's saying, no, I'm on the side of the companies, and I would like to continue to screw over the American people. Thank you very much. So the Obama administration comes along, and they draft a rule. They say, okay, well, going into effect in 2016, we're putting an end to this. You can no longer steer your clients solely based on your own private gain and personal gain that you want to get without any regard for, you know, whether or not you're doing the right thing by them. That's essentially fraud. It's basically a new kind of anti-fraud law that cracks down on this specific kind of fraud. So again, 2016, it's supposed to go into place, which brings me full circle all the way back to why this guy Mueller decided to take a job with Senator Mark Kirk. He was hired specifically for the reason of lobbying against this and watering down this rule before it goes into effect in 2016. They're flaunting their corruption at this point, man. They don't even try. Back in the day, of course, where there's always been corruption in politics. There always will be some degree of corruption in politics. But back in the day, people had the sense to, like, let me at least try to hide the fact that what I'm doing I know is unethical, I know is immoral, and I know this isn't what is supposed to be my job. I'm supposed to look out for the American people. I'm supposed to give a shit about government, whether you're a politician or whether you're somebody who's on the staff who needs to care about the process of how you draft bills. They're not even bothering to hide it anymore. They're just like, no, I am going to hire the lobbyist who specifically is here to try to help out special interests and screw over the American people. And that lobbyist is going to try to get rid of a rule that's going to help the American people, according to all objective economic observers. Our government's a joke, man. And understand it. They go on to explain in the article that this guy, and many others as well, have gone from, you know, they go work in Washington, they work on some senator's staff or some congressman's staff, they help do favors for people on Wall Street, the big banks, hedge funds, you name it. So then when they leave there, they immediately get hired by the people on Wall Street. They stay on Wall Street for X amount of years. Many of them go back to government to get new connections, to get more connections, because the crowd is different than it was in 1998 or whatever, the last time they were there. So they work there a little bit. They get some new connections. You know, they jerk each other off at the country club and drink scotch. Then they go back to Wall Street, and it's the same thing. This is the revolving door. It goes around and around and around and around and around. Everybody in Washington, whether on the staff or the politicians themselves, they are buddy-buddy with everybody on Wall Street. And again, like you all know, it's a circle jerk of money. The corporations and the lobbyists give money to the politicians do their bidding, and it goes around and around and around, and everybody's looking out for each other, and everybody's looking out for each other, and who gets screwed over in this entire process? You do! The American people do! You elect these people, they're supposed to represent you, they're supposed to do what you want them to do. They don't give a fuck about what you want! Not even a little bit! We don't even have 25% democracy in America. They don't even listen to you 25% of the time. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. That's from a Princeton study which looked into the effect of how American opinion translates into whether or not we get law based off of that. We get it 0% of the time if you're middle class or poor. Our opinions have no effect on what the lawmakers do. But what has a perfect effect? There's a perfect correlation between what the rich want, what the corporations want, what the billionaires want, and what we end up getting in terms of policy. That's not an accident. It's set up like that on purpose, essentially. Ever since money was viewed as free speech, oh, you can give as much as you want, ever since that happened, you know, it's been clear that the people with the money have a louder voice and have more of a say in the democracy by definition. By definition, Sheldon Adelson is, you know, his voice counts much more than some grandmother in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So, I mean, the sad thing is when we read this, it's like, should we even be surprised anymore? It couldn't be any more clear who the politicians are working for, and the answer is not you. Okay. Now let's go to Donald Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld admitted in a recent interview that he gave to the Times that he actually didn't agree with George W. Bush on every aspect of the Iraq War. Now, this may come as a surprise because Donald Trump was like the mouthpiece of the Bush administration in many respects, and it certainly appeared that he was in lockstep, and all of them were in lockstep. George Bush, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, and the rest of the neocons, Bill Kristol, you name it. But like I said, now he's saying, well, there was one little area of disagreement. So let's get into this. They say, quote, during the Bush years, Rumsfeld had consistently defended the administration and the decision to go into Iraq, but recently he admitted that he wasn't exactly on board with the idea that it would be possible to bring democracy to the region via the country previously led by Saddam Hussein. So here's his quote. He says, I'm not one who thinks that our particular template of democracy is appropriate for other countries at every moment of their histories. The idea that we could fashion a democracy in Iraq seemed to me unrealistic. And he goes, today, in 2015. Yeah, you know those, like, what are they called again? Liberals? They were right. This is exactly what liberals were saying all along. If you understand the history of Iraq, the fact that it's a fucking made-up country, the borders were drawn in, I think it was 1932, you have rival factions, you have religious differences, you have ethnic differences, you have nationalistic differences, all these different problems, very different people. The fact that you slapped it together, I mean, what'd you expect? You expected them to all be like, you know, the Kurds are like, on second thought, I love those Shias. And the Shias are like, ah, the Sunnis, right at each other's throats, but like, give me a hug. It was a fake country made up by Western powers. It was chaos from day one. Of course, anybody who understands the history, anybody who looks at the situation, anybody who knows the deep religious differences in the region, they would go, yeah, I don't think it's going to work if we go in there as an outside invader, topple the government, and what are we going to do? Say, all right, who's going to play the role of Thomas Jefferson? Maliki, you'll be Jefferson? Okay, who wants to be Madison? Ben Franklin, anybody? Ben Franklin? People are looking like, what the fuck? They don't even have an identity which is first and foremost linked up with their country. You know, take America, for example, but you can use any other, France, whatever country you want. If you talk to somebody from there, the first thing they'll say is, yes, I am French. Yes, I am American. If you talk to somebody from, depending on where you go in Iraq, chances are they're going to say, yeah, I'm Kurdish. They're not going to say, I'm Iraqi, even though they live in Iraq. They're going to say, no, I'm Kurdish. I am from Kurdistan, which is what we view more as our state. Yeah, I'm a Shia. You know, there's my allegiance. I'm a Sunni. How about that? Some people who are in Iraq in the Shia regions might even say, I'm more Iranian than anything else because Iran is a Shia state. So it's fucking made up. We knew, and we've been saying all along, that it wasn't going to work if you give them a democracy. Okay? And by the way, we haven't even bridged the conversation of whether or not we have a right to just go around the world and try to dictate to places what kind of government they should have. If the Iraqi people rose up themselves and created a democracy for themselves, that's a different conversation. If they do that, fine, I support them, whatever. I got nothing to do with that. But for us to say we have the right to go in there and topple the government and create whatever kind of government we want, how fucking pompous is that? How arrogant is that? Would we accept that if Greenland started going all over the place, they topple Malaysia, and they're like, okay, now you guys will have communism? We'd be like, what are you doing, Greenland? Mind your fucking business. What are you, crazy? Imagine if Iran started doing that. They topple all these governments. All right, well, now we're now changing this government to a fascist government. We'd be like, okay, stop. You can't do that. We're not going to allow you to do that. But when we do it, we're like, everybody sit down and shut up. We're allowed to do this. Thank you, Donald, for finally admitting that we're right. But understand, man, every single reason has fallen for the Iraq War. First, what was it? Saddam did 9-11. We must attack now. Turns out that was absolute horseshit. Then it was Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. Now, understand, the implication was he has them and he's going to use them. Neither of those things were true. Number one, he didn't have them. Number two, even if he did have them, he was a Ba'athist. He wasn't a religious fundamentalist. He was smart enough to know if he launches an attack against America or anybody else, his punk ass will be blown out of the sky in 3 seconds. So that was incorrect. Then they just said he's a bad guy. Oh, really? That's a reason to topple a government? We've spoken about this a million times, guys. We just allowed Malaysia into the TPP. Malaysia has a slave system in place. They tolerate slavery. Not my words. That's not my words. That's from the AP. That's from Washington Post and other outlets that have reported on it. And we're fine with that because they're with our corporations. They'll let us exploit that labor. So this idea of like, oh, he's a bad guy, so we should topple him. Saudi Arabian government is fucking horrendous. They behead atheists. They behead people for sorcery and witchcraft, which doesn't fucking exist. For drug smuggling, you get beheaded. Please, they're as bad as it gets, but we, you know, since they're our buddy, okay, it's whatever. Well, it was the same thing with Saddam. We're not really going after him because he's a bad guy. We're fine with bad guys as long as they're our buddies. So everything has fallen. The last one that was remaining was, well, we're just good guys. We're Americans, and we want to bring them democracy. It turns out on that front, too. Nonsense! Even the biggest neocon, Donald Rumsfeld, was like, come on, really? We're going to bring him democracy? That's what we're going to bring him democracy. I mean, you have to be an idiot to believe that. Which explains Bush, because Bush was like, all right, Dick and Don, so are we going to, like, bring him the freedom juice? I could just see Cheney in the corner cracking a baby skull and drinking it. Yes, the freedom juice. And Donald Rumsfeld is like, okay, you guys are idiots. But I like war anyway, so let's do it. These neocons, man. I'm not sure if it's possible to be wrong about absolutely everything, but somehow they managed to do it. Squeeze in another one here. Jeb Bush, we go from the former Bush administration to this Bush, wannabe Bush administration, I should say. So oftentimes on this show, I've made the point about conservative ideologues that they don't seem to have any policy solutions. So in other words, their idea is to berate people that they disagree with until those people do what they want. So just to give one example here, look at Bill O'Reilly and look at what he says about poverty. He makes it clear that in his mind, it's always the individual's fault and there's never any systemic issues to address from a policy perspective, which is why he hates when the Democrats try to do any kind of anti-poverty program. He's against all of them because he views it more as they just got to get their shit together and they're lazy. That's his mindset. And without fail, whenever I discuss this, some conservative on Twitter or elsewhere tweets me and, they say, well, that's not true or you're misstating it. Okay, well, today it's game, set, match because somebody had the brilliant idea to go back and read Jeb Bush's 1995 book called Profiles in Character, and it's full of this nonsense and that narrative, that way of thinking. So in a chapter called The Restoration of Shame, Bush said the following, quote, one of the reasons more young women are giving birth out of wedlock and more young men are walking away from their paternal obligations is that there is no longer a stigma attached to this behavior, no reason to feel shame. Let's pause here. Dude, you made that up. Where's your, did he quote a study? Did he talk to mention any expert, any researcher, anything? Sociologist, anything? No, he just proclaims it. Classic. This is conservatism 101, modern-day conservatism 101. Say some shit, don't back it up at all, and then get mad when people disagree with you. Motherfucker, you didn't prove anything. You just said something. That doesn't count as evidence. One of the reasons more young people are giving birth out of wedlock is that there is no longer a stigma attached to this behavior. Really? I think there's quite a stigma attached to that behavior. So all you got to do is say it, and that's enough in the conservative bubble. He says, many of these young women and young men look around and see their friends engaged in the same irresponsible conduct. Their parents and neighbors have become ineffective at attaching some sense of ridicule to this behavior. There was a time when neighbors and communities would frown on out-of-wedlock births and when public condemnation was enough of a stimulus for one to be careful. Now, here's why this is extra stupid. What really is the answer to a problem like unwanted babies? Maybe condoms and the pill and Planned Parenthood and comprehensive sex education and abortion, for example? So in other words, all of the things that the Democrats believe in and the progressives have called for, that's the solution to the problem. But what's his solution? He doesn't have a solution. His idea is, I just want to berate these people. I just want to say, shame, shame on you, shame, shame. So in other words, it's all about you and your feelings and you getting off on feeling morally superior. That's what it's about. While you actively block every policy that would actually help the situation. And then not to mention, I don't want to get too deep into this, but not to mention, there is a decrease in birth rates across the board when you have a society where more people are in the middle class. So you have NAFTA, you have GATT, you have the WTO, you have all these free trade policies that are outsourcing policies that get rid of all middle class and manufacturing jobs in America. People get hammered, birth rates go up, and he blames the people. But if all the policies that you supported weren't put in place in the first place, we'd have a stronger middle class in America, and it's been proven that when you have a stronger middle class, there are fewer births. So again, I know this is all over his head because these are facts. He would rather just, you know, do the stupid, me no like single mother, shame, shame, shame. How about shame on you for shaming them? As if they don't have it hard enough. There's zero sympathy from Republicans. They're incapable of looking at a situation through the eyes of somebody else. Jeb Bush never thinks, well, what if I was a single father and I was struggling? Wouldn't I want people to be kind to me and to give me help and to be open-minded? He never thinks like that. It's always just, they're not me. Me no like them. Shame, shame, shame. What a fucking jackass. So Bush goes on to say, you know the book The Scarlet Letter? We should, like, do that. Dude, that wasn't, like, the idea was not that that's positive. You put The Scarlet Letter on somebody and it's like, yay, we did it! No, we look at that now and go, oh my God, that's incredibly cruel. But he's like, no, I loved it. I loved it. Shame people. So he's not done yet, though. He said, American schools and the welfare system could also use a healthy dose of shame. Quote, for many, it is more shameful to work than to take public assistance. That is how backward shame has become. Again, give me any study, give me any example other than listening to fucking Sean Hannity radio shows and Rush Limbaugh radio shows. That narrative is fucking made up. We've spoken about the fraud rate, the abuse rate, and the waste rate in programs like food stamps, for example, where they say, oh, it's being abused because people are lazy. They don't want to work. They just want to get free food. The fraud rate is 1%. So in other words, 99% of the people taking food stamps are just families that genuinely need it. And by the way, a lot of people who are getting government assistance work full-time. A full-time job doesn't pay enough money so that you can survive without government help. How are you going to blame somebody for just trying to make ends meet when they're working a full-time job and the job doesn't pay them enough? You should be mad at the job itself. You should be mad at the company for not paying a living wage. But he can never get mad at companies because that's his buddies. Part of the establishment. He loves those guys. He sees them at the country club. He can't be mad at them. He's got to be mad at the poor people. And then on criminal justice, he said this, quote, in the context of present-day society, we need to make kids feel shame before their friends rather than their family. The Miami Herald columnist Robert Steinbeck has a great idea. He suggests dressing these juveniles in frilly pink jumpsuits and making them sweep the streets of their own neighborhoods. Would these kids be so cavalier then? Oh, man. That's it. I'm calling it now. Jeb Bush is on the same intellectual plane as George W. Bush. He's not a smart guy. He's a stupid person. That's your answer? That's how you solve the problem of crime in America? Must be stopped. How do we do it? Make the inmates wear pink dresses and sweep the streets. Okay, look. Okay, let's make a deal. Fine, let's do that ridiculous idea. How about we start with everybody on Wall Street who crashed the economy, and you know, as a result of that, millions of people were kicked out of their houses because of predatory loans, where the people on Wall Street did fraud and they got rich as a result of it. They did a bigger crime than anybody who's ever robbed a liquor store or anything like that. So, okay, deal. Let's shake on it. Let's have the criminals wear pink dresses and sweep the streets. Let's start with your brother, Dick Cheney, you, and everybody on Wall Street. How's that sound? Oh, you don't like that idea now. Weird. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to prove to you just how little Republicans know about Obamacare. Rick Santorum did a campaign stop that didn't go very well. Can't wait to talk about that. And Stuart Varney gets all outraged because somebody questioned his credibility, and we have it on tape. Awesome. Stay right there. John Thune, a Republican of South Dakota, really broadcast to the world how little he knows about Obamacare with a single tweet. So while weighing in on the new Supreme Court case about Obamacare, he said the following. 6 million people risk losing their health care subsidies, yet the president continues to deny that Obamacare is bad for the American people. Do I even need to do the rest of the story to explain to you just why that's so dumb and how that's so stupid? Because, I think for you guys, because you guys are a very educated audience, when you guys look at that, the first thing you do is, did he just say that? Oh, no, he didn't just say that. I can't believe he just said that. Okay. The reason why 6 million people may lose their health care subsidies is because the Supreme Court might take away Obamacare. Those people, those 6 million people are covered because of Obamacare. They're covered through Obamacare. So Obamacare saved the day. If they take it away, that would ruin it. But what's his response? Goddamn Obamacare. People may lose their health insurance because of my ideas, but fuck Obamacare. Okay, Dan, guys, we often have the debate, we often have the discussion. Well, are these guys on the right, are they saying the things that they say because they're stupid people? Or are they lying to you, essentially? So they know the truth, but it's like nefarious how they come out and they mislead on purpose because they're purely, you know, helping out their corporate buddies and they're covering up for what the real agenda is. Now, I've maintained from day one, it's a mix. It's a mix. It depends on who you talk about. It's different for different conservative media figures. It's different for the different politicians. So you have to go on a case-by-case basis. When it comes to Senator John Thune, here's my conclusion. The guy's a moron. And maybe I'm being slightly unfair here, although not really, but because he could just be incredibly ignorant in the sense that he doesn't know anything about Obamacare at all, but he wants to comment on it, so he comments without actually doing the hard work and researching and reading. You understand what I mean? But it's probably a mix of both. He's probably ignorant, and he's a fucking moron. He's definitely a moron, because why would you say that? How can you say that without checking the bullshit that you're saying? I mean, it's Republican 101 on the issue of Obamacare. They fucking proposed a policy nearly identical to it in the 1990s, and now they've all flipped on the policy they all used to support because President Obama agreed with them. People don't know this, man. Even going back further, Richard Nixon proposed a similar policy to Obamacare, the idea of the individual mandate in Obamacare. So first it was Nixon, then it was the Heritage Foundation, a right-wing think tank in the early 1990s that wrote policy papers where they said, this is the idea that we like. It was very similar to Obamacare. Gingrich and Chuck Grassley and other Republicans at the time who said, this is our proposal. This is our counter to Clinton care, when the Clintons were trying to propose a more liberal solution for the healthcare system. They said, no, we like this. And their answer was an individual mandate system like Obamacare. Then Obama says, I agree with you, Republicans. They're like, oh, we hate that idea. And it's a government takeover of healthcare. You came up with it. Of course it's not a government takeover of healthcare. You keep the private health insurance companies in place and you make it so that people have to go buy from it. I wish we had a single-payer system. We don't. And look, that's the thing. Republicans virtually across the board think that Obamacare is a government takeover of healthcare. It is just empirically, factually not. It's not even a public option, which is like, hey, you have the choice to buy into a system that's, you know, the government essentially. It's like a Medicare system. It's not even that. 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 It's fucking, we're going to make you go to a private insurance company and buy coverage there. So they say it's a government takeover. It couldn't be any more opposite of it. It's the most free market solution you can have when it comes to addressing the healthcare system. And then what this reminds me of is, like the death panels lie, for example. They just say anything. You know, they have verbal diarrhea. They make shit up. And the entire time they arrogantly and condescendingly act like they know what the fuck they're talking about, and it's the liberals who don't get it. No, believe me, we get it. You don't get it. You're so concerned about death panels in Obamacare, which doesn't fucking exist. Meanwhile, you give the real death panels a pass, those death panels being the private insurance companies. Okay, that's the problem. The problem is that the way it's set up, they deny care as much as possible in order to pad their bottom lines because they have to make profit because they have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to do so. How many private insurance companies have said, I'm rejecting your claim because of some bullshit reason in your past that's irrelevant to this situation, but I'm going to reject it because I need to find a way to wiggle out of paying for it because I have to make profit? Happened all the time. They had whole departments for it. It's a process called rescission. They've been doing it for the longest time. It took Obamacare to step in and say, you can't do that part of it in order to fix it. So they call, oh, death panels in Obamacare. They're going to kill your grandma. Meanwhile, the real death panels are in the system that you guys want the most, which is a pure capitalist system, or the system that we had before we had any reform whatsoever. All of you guys, including Senator John Thune, you're a massive joke, and you have no clue what the fuck you're talking about. Okay, now, let's go to Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum likes to fancy himself a man of the people. Now, in reality, he's the Christian Taliban, and he's also a corporate puppet. But nonetheless, he thinks that he's a populist, or he plays the role of a populist. So since he announced his presidential run, he's been touring the country and trying to muster up some grassroots support. So how's that going? Well, Mediaite has an article about this. They say, quote, when just one Iowan showed up to Rick Santorum's 2 p.m. campaign stop at a restaurant here Monday, the winner of the 2012 Iowa caucus made a quick decision, might as well order lunch. For Santorum, who's making a second go at the Republican nomination for president, the low turnout wasn't surprising, he said, but all part of the plan. Okay. That's embarrassing. So nobody shows up to his campaign event, and he's like, no, I like it like this. It's cozy. It's comfy. I got it's me and some of my friends here, my friends who I just met from Iowa. Good people. I didn't want anybody else here. That's the deal, man. Now, people in the media were like, come again? He's like, yeah, no, it's cool. I didn't want anybody here. Now, to be fair to Rick Santorum, a little later, three more people did show up, bringing the grand total to four. But here's the best part. Quote, later, after posing for a couple of photos and shaking hands, Santorum stood outside the diner and called the event a success. He said, people don't understand. One guy in there said, I'll speak for you at the caucus. That's maybe eight votes that you wouldn't otherwise get. Eight votes can make a big difference, as I know. Dude, you have to stop. Rick, little Ricky, just stop, man. You're making an ass of yourself. You know, this reminds me of the time that he argued that the term middle class is a Marxist term. He's like, I can't believe anybody says that we don't have classes in America. He said this. Don't use the term middle class. It's a Marxist term. Okay, now that you know that he said that, you wait and see. Wait until the debates happen. How many times he uses the term middle class. And then, believe me, we'll come back and we'll juxtapose the two clips. How dare you say middle class? That's a Marxist term. Cut to Rick Santorum saying, I'm on the side of the middle class. That's what I'm doing. Now, keep in mind, and in the article they talk about this, they kind of hedge a little bit, and they're like, don't be too much of a dick to Rick Santorum because he was in a town of like 6,000 people. He was in rural Iowa, so come on. A few people show up, whatever, no big deal. Okay, fair enough. But just to give you some context here, Bernie Sanders also did an event recently in rural Iowa. And, I mean, they're right. Okay, so you go to rural Iowa, nobody shows up. It happens to everybody. It happens to the best of them. So how many people showed up when Bernie Sanders did a similar thing? No big deal or anything, but 750 people. In fact, for Bernie's event in rural Iowa, they had a room with 300 chairs set up. 750 people came in. Don't give me this shit. Don't give me this. Oh, you got to give him a pass because it's Iowa, something, something, something. No. Rick Santorum is a dunce. Nobody fucking likes him. So when he goes places, one dude shows up and goes, oh, I thought this was a Huckabee event. Okay, next. Stuart Varney. Stuart Varney had the producer of the documentary Gasland on his Fox Business show to discuss the issue of fracking, and the interview crashed and burned in a hilarious way. So you're going to see the beginning and the end of the interview here. In the middle, Varney mentions how he bought property where fracking was happening nearby, and you'll see the back and forth, and after that, it just goes downhill. Check it out.
From the EPA, quoting from their report on fracking, okay, that's getting oil and gas from deep underground, is what they said. We did not find evidence that these mechanisms have led to widespread systemic impacts on drinking water. Join me now, Josh Fox. He's the director and the producer of the anti-fracking documentary, Gasland. Now, I took that as the conclusion of the EPA report. Well, hold on a second. That's what I took as the conclusion. You disagree with it, correct?
Well, absolutely. In fact, the EPA issued something of a retraction of that statement this weekend because it led to a lot of false reporting on the subject. What we're actually seeing here is a pattern within the Obama administration, specifically with regards to fracking and the EPA, which is that when you see a scientific report, now this report is 1,000 pages long. Nobody expects everyone over the weekend to have read the entire thing. But within the report is actually really damning evidence about fracking contaminating wastewater in Pennsylvania,
Wasn't that the actual way that fracking was conducted? It was mistaken in how fracking was done.
No, absolutely not. What this report says is that fracking contaminates wastewater. Groundwater. What the EPA does, however, time and time again,
aquifers.
What the EPA has done time and time again on this issue is issue a scientific report which has actual science in it, and then slap on the top of it a press release or a statement that says, oh, nothing really to see here. There are 470 scientific reports right now, peer-reviewed, that state that fracking contaminates groundwater. That's bad for the air. It's bad for public health.
I'm wrong about lighting the tap water before fracking ever appeared.
You are absolutely
wrong. I'm not,
because
I did it myself.
Because what we're talking about...
I did it myself.
I do believe you are lying right now.
Lying?
Because the point is, yes, I do.
The interview is over, young man. The interview is over. I am not lying.
Okay.
I did it myself.
If you said to me earlier that you would not want fracking in your own neighborhood...
You're out of here, son.
You're responsible for
you. You are out of here.
The rest of America should
try. Don't call me a liar. do that.
You're clearly obfuscating the truth over and over again during this thing.
That's it. Thank you very much, sir. Will you please leave?
I think Stuart Varney may have been watching Secular Talk because he said son a few times there. Don't you accuse me of lying, son. He had, like, the ice grill going. He was angry. There's nothing funnier than a British guy who's angry, though. Come on, man, be honest. Because even then, you're like, oh, it's adorable. Come on. I mean, come on, really? Is that supposed to be as intimidating as a guy from New York, for example, getting angry? No. You can try, but no. All right, so what's the heart of the issue here? Stuart Varney got his panties in a bunch because this documentary creator here accused him of lying. Now, actually, believe it or not, on that point, I don't know. So, Varney says he owns a piece of property in an area where, you know, they started fracking after he moved there, and he says that I was able to light the water on fire before they started doing fracking there. Now, what he's doing is he's attacking the notion that, you know, fracking leads to people being able to light their water on fire. In terms of his specific experience, of course I don't know if he really could light the water on fire before fracking happened at his own place. I just don't know. I wish I did know, but I don't know. So on that, I'm agnostic. But in terms of the broader picture, is it the case and is it true that after fracking moves into various places all around the U.S., that then people can light their water on fire when before they couldn't? Yeah. So Varney's attacking the idea that, you know, fracking never leads to people being able to light their water on fire. That's bullshit. That's not true. And we know that's not true. There's been so many examples of that, so much evidence of that, so many articles written about that. So on the bigger point, Stuart Varney is 100% wrong. And let's be clear. What's his bigger point. What's Varney getting at? Calm down about fracking. There's nothing wrong with it. And let these big companies, let these oil and gas companies do what they want because something, something economy. I mean, that's his show in a nutshell is, you know, let the corporations get away with whatever they want. Don't regulate them in any way, shape, or form. Sit down and shut up if you're a liberal. And, you know, the GDP growth, that's the only thing we should care about. Care about shit like that. Well, to that point, he's just comically stupid. Because if anybody who's done any research on fracking in any serious way knows that, number one, it's been linked to an increase in earthquakes. Again, not my opinion. There's been various studies that prove that because you're drilling into shale rock and screwing up the foundation. So it just has led to more earthquakes, and that's a problem. He doesn't want to talk about that. Furthermore, to the point that, you know, oh, it doesn't contaminate water. Dude, in the fracking fluid itself, the chemicals that are in the fracking water that they use to drill into the shale rock and then pump it in to force the gas to the surface, it's methanol, antifreeze, paint solvent, benzene, diesel fuel, lead, hydrogen fluoride, naphthalene, sulfuric acid, formaldehyde, hundreds of toxic chemicals, poisons, acids, carcinogens. So, honestly, it's a matter of common sense when you look at that, that you go, that's not good that that's being pumped into the ground and then they can't get it all out because it gets absorbed by the ground. And it almost stands to reason that if there are nearby waterways, it's not surprising that some of that stuff would leak into it. And it has, which is why people have been able to light their water on fire. We've covered stories on this show where people in certain places have lost their hair and they got really sick because the air is filled with the fracking chemicals and it's coming through their faucet and out of their showers and shit. So on the bigger point, Stuart Varney is 100% wrong. But again, to be clear, I don't know if he had an issue with lighting his water on fire before he even moved in. But the fact that he got so, like, angry and worked up over it makes me think, like, dude, what are you hiding? You know, it's almost like all the anti-gay guys who are like, being gay is wrong, it's bad, I'm not gay, what? And then they're, you know, they get caught sucking a dick somewhere. Stuart Varney's like, I'm not lying, I'm telling the truth, I could light my water on fire. That's why I'm screaming about it and I'm kicking you off the show when you say you don't believe me. All right, dude, if it really happened, calm the fuck down. All right. How much time I got before my break skis? All right, I'll squeeze in one or two more here. All right, let's go to a story, a really heartbreaking story about medical marijuana. The Washington Post broke a story today that just absolutely breaks my heart and makes me sick. It's about a mother who has to use medical marijuana and what's happened to her as a result of that. What's been the societal backlash as a result of that? So here's what they say. Quote, a Kansas mother, Shona Banda, is unable to see her child and faces decades in prison after authorities confiscated marijuana from her home in March. The state of Kansas charged Banda with 5 felony counts of possession of marijuana with the intent to distribute, manufacturing THC oil extracted from marijuana, and 2 counts of possession of drug paraphernalia, and 1 count of child endangerment. So she began using medical marijuana about 5 years ago to treat Crohn's disease. Symptoms of the condition include severe diarrhea, weight loss, and malnutrition. Crohn's can be physically debilitating and even life-threatening. And before she began cannabis treatment, cane, and often couldn't get off the couch. Now, here's how she got caught. Quote, during the school's drug education programming, Banda's 11-year-old son spoke out in class about the benefits of medical marijuana. The treatment had saved his mother's life, he told teachers and classmates. Teachers relayed the boy's story to school administrators, who then called the police, who in turn brought in Child Protective Services. They confiscated medicine and other property and prohibited her from seeing her son. Yeah. like I said, story is beyond heartbreaking. You have a mother who has Crohn's disease, needs medical marijuana in order to function, and because the son makes an offhand comment about how medical marijuana saved his mother's life, he's taken away from her, and she's put in jail. What kind of a country do we live in? Is this the kind of country we want to live in? I mean, it's almost comical for us to say to the rest of the world that we believe in freedom and democracy. And it's comical that we try to outsource this stuff when obviously we got a lot of shit to deal with here. What is freedom? What does the word freedom mean? Does it have a meaning? Or do we just say it when politicians are trying to get elected and then they get in there and they don't give a fuck about it one way or the other? Because if you actually believe in freedom, you believe that people have a right to do whatever they want to do with their own body as long as they're not hurting anybody else. And by the way, this goes above and beyond even that argument, because we're not even talking about somebody who uses it recreationally. Now, in that situation, in my opinion, it would still be fine. But here you have somebody who needs it for medicinal reasons. And because the laws are draconian and are primitive and they make absolutely no fucking sense, she's being punished. How can we live in a system where we just accept the dumb laws of our fathers and our fathers' fathers and our fathers' fathers' fathers? And you know what? That's not even an accurate statement there because, well, I mean, what? We got the first drug laws were on the books in the early 1900s. There was a time in America when you can go to the store and get cocaine elixir because you had a toothache or something like that. They used to give little kids spoons of opium for them to be able to go to sleep at night. You know? I mean, there used to – you do know why they banned heroin, for example, because – the white men were afraid that their daughters were going to go into the Chinese opium dens. So the Chinese, when they were working on the railroads, they had opium dens. And they would mind their business, smoke the opium, and, you know, do whatever. White fathers were afraid. We got to ban the dens because I don't want my white daughter going and fucking Chinese people in the opium dens. If you go back and look at the history of the drug war, it is racist. It's a racist war. You try to criminalize things that minorities do for recreation. This way you criminalize the population, and anytime you feel threatened, you get to lock up significant chunks of the population, and you do that to have social control. It all goes back to Marx's theory of it's called conflict theory, that the police and law enforcement aren't there to really care about justice and to apply it equally. They're there for the upper classes to control the lower classes, the middle class and the poor. And that's what we're seeing in practice here. How can anybody logically and rationally sit there and explain to you that, no, it's okay that this woman who's using medicine gets her kid taken away from her and she gets fucking locked up as a result of it? How can anybody tell you that? Meanwhile, fucking Percocets and Vicodin and OxyContin and Oxycodone and all these things, that's synthetic heroin and synthetic morphine. It reacts the same way in your body. You're getting a similar high. If you take 3 Percocets, you're getting a similar high to somebody who injects heroin into their arm. The only difference is with the Percocet, they have a little bit of acetaminophen in there, which is like Tylenol, basically. So they say, oh, this is medicine. That's what this is. This is medicine. It's totally fine. Nobody bats an eyelash and says, lock this woman up because, you know, she's taking Percocets, but when it's marijuana, which is not nearly as deadly a drug, take her kid away and lock her up. Understand, the bottom line is, you know who the bad people are in this scenario? The state. The state represents the evildoers here. The people who called from the school to have this woman locked up are the bad people here. What's so ironic is they morally judge the fuck out of her and say, oh, you're doing this substance, the kid is in danger, yada, yada, yada. You don't know dick from dick. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about, okay? You're the bad people. You're the immoral people. Take away this woman's kid and put her in jail because she smoked a little weed. How about you, motherfucker? Did you drink some tequila last night? Did you do that? You had a bad back? You wanted to kick back and relax? You had a scotch, maybe? You had some Budweiser? So how about we come and take away your kids? How about that? How about we lock you in a fucking cage because we don't agree with something you put in your body when you weren't hurting anybody? How about that? By the way, the end of this story here, you know what happened? She stopped smoking marijuana because she wants her kid back. She's right back to walking on a cane and in extreme pain, and she still doesn't have her kid back. If you're not outraged about this, your sense of morality is broken. in the video description, I'm going to put the petition, which demands that justice is done in this scenario. Sign that petition. We must reverse this wrong. All right, guys. You know what? Let me do one more here. Should I do one more? No, I'm not. Let me take my a break. We'll come back. We'll do the interview with Joshua Turner, and then after that, I'll give you Pat Robertson, and if we have time, I'll give you a few more. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show.
Soon, you have decisions to make. Where you'll live, when you'll move, and what entertainment provider to go with. Wait, that one's easy. Verizon Fios. Power your home with super fast internet and crystal clear TV picture quality. Now that's a smart move.
Welcome back to the show. I am I'm very happy to welcome to the show somebody who we spoke to recently. We had a great conversation. His name is Joshua Turner, and Josh is a reformed neo-Nazi skinhead. So he fell in with a bad crowd when he was younger, and he managed to dig his way out of that situation in a very respectable way, and he's a fascinating character. He is... Now, today we're going to discuss SaveByReason.org, which is his new project that he's doing here, and I'm actually taking part in it as well. So, Josh, thanks for joining me, man. It's really great to talk to you again.
Great to be here, Kyle. Thanks for having me on the show, man. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, same here, man. Same here. So, tell everybody, for everybody who didn't hear our last conversation, just give everybody the cliff notes as to your personal story, because your story is absolutely fascinating, man, and it's one of those stories that it's so fucking good that it could honestly, it could be a movie, and it could be a good movie.
Well, thanks. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the movie American History X. My life is similar to that. If you just throw in religious extremism, I grew up indoctrinated ever since I was born into a very, very strict religious fundamentalist Christian family that was extremely irrational. I was told when I was 8 years old that my brother and I would have our fingers and our toes cut off and then our limbs chopped off and finally our head in front of our mother by the feds in order for my parents to take the mark of the beast so that we could buy, sell, or trade food, and that this was going to happen just right in the near future. So I grew up with a lot of irrationality, just indoctrinated into my life, and this carried on into my teenage years, where I started to rebel and lash out, and started using drugs, and fell in with the wrong crowd, as you said, and started hanging out with skinheads, and started getting locked up. And when I was 18 years old, I caught a 5-year term for stealing a car, and I ended up doing 5 years in prison with a bunch of skinheads. And just the reason why I became a skinhead is the similarities were very, 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 very similar. Excuse me.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're there, you know, sorry, but yeah, they're very similar. The psychology between religious fundamentalism and a political religious movement.
And you were telling me last time, I thought this was a really interesting comment when you said that one of the ways that these guys, like, seduce people into joining, essentially, is that they frame it as, no, we don't hate anybody. We're not anti-anybody. We're just pro-white. And then they give you, like, you know, a whole bunch of skewed statistics or narratives to back up the idea that, you know, white people are under attack and this and that. And next thing you know, if you mix in that with people who can actually treat you like, oh, you're one of us and you belong and we like you, it's just a toxic mix where people go, oh, okay, this has to be the answer because these guys accept me and these guys are providing, you know, a cause and a higher purpose, essentially, no matter how, you know, bad that purpose may be to an outside viewer.
Exactly. And there's even a neo-Nazi version of Christianity. It's called Christian Identity. And, you know, that even, you know, that gets their hooks into people that grew up religious, you know what I mean, and that don't want to give up God, and now, but they have, you know, racist tendencies or whatever, well, now they have an excuse to embrace, you know, their religiosity and their racism at the same time. So
talk about what you're working on now, because this is, I mean, I think this idea is brilliant, and it's amazing, really, that, you know, people haven't come before you to try to do something similar here. And just so everybody, just real quick, I'll throw out a few things here before you take over. The idea is, you know, Josh knows how he was reformed. So in a way, he kind of empirically knows what worked for him. And to do something with that information is the next step. So the idea is to create a group where we can, you know, try to help people in the same way that you were helped. So tell everybody a little bit about the group here and, you know, what the goal is.
Sure. Yeah, well, right now, if you were an inmate in prison in California or anywhere in the United States, as far as I know, and being locked up myself in California, I know firsthand, that if you're not religious and you needed and you wanted to reach out and to get some kind of help from the outside, some kind of literature or somebody to come visit you and talk to you and give you moral support, this isn't available to anybody unless you belong to a particular religion. If you're Christian or if you're Muslim or, you know, Buddhist, there's plenty of stuff for you. But if you identify as non-religious or atheist, agnostic, free thinker or whatever, there's nothing there for you. So after I talked to you, I really just got passionate about writing my book, and I looked into it to see, you know, if I can go to start speaking with inmates, and I was told that I would have to be a minister. And so that kind of got the ball rolling in me looking into that direction, and I found out there is nothing like this out there. If you are a non-believer, there's nothing for you in prison or jail as far as a minister or some kind of outreach. So that's what gave me the idea for Saved by a Reason. And that's what we do is we use the Socratic method to teach inmates to increase their moral reasoning and their critical thinking skills. Dr. Peter Boghossian has actually done this. He's written several studies on it. It reduces recidivism. So it actually works. So we're using things that actually work scientifically.
Yeah, and I was going to say, even just theoretically speaking, here's why I think it does work and it's going to work, is that when you think about, like, reforming yourself into being, you know, a rational person and a thinker and somebody who's engaged in philosophy and sociology and all this other stuff, there's always something to do when you wake up in the morning. I know just from doing my show with all the news articles I have to read and then I have to come on air and talk about it and stuff like that, every day when I wake up, I'm like, okay, I got to go. I got to start reading these things. I got to start learning. I got to start soaking up information. I got to, you know, make sense of it, and then I got to share it. And if you contrast that to, you know, other ideologies, like religious ideologies, for example, in all seriousness, they're very lazy in how they function. Like, if you call yourself a Christian, you call yourself a Muslim, you call yourself part of a religious group, you call yourself part of a really extremist political movement, like, you know, neo-Nazi skinheads or like any other, even super far left-wing groups like communists, for example. It becomes lazy. It's like, okay, you have, for Christians, you have this one book, the Bible, that's all it is, and shut the fuck up and just try to spread your message with that one book. For Muslims, okay, Quran and Hadith, and shut the fuck up, that's it. If you're a secular person, you know, you wake up, there's a trillion things to read. Every philosophy book ever written, every sociology book ever written, every news article on every website, it never gets old. There's always things to learn. There's always, you know, new ideas to explore. And it's something that, you know, they say people who have addiction problems or other kinds of issues, they just need something to take the place of that that's, like, socially acceptable and won't harm them. And a lot of people find that kind of solace in going to the gym and being obsessed with that. But I think a big one is if people actually try to care about intellectual pursuits, which is what essentially you're trying to get people into, that's one that does nothing but pay dividends for the rest of your life.
Yes, absolutely agree, yeah. And these principles that we're teaching them, you don't have to be a genius to understand. And so I don't want to scare them away with, you know, big, huge words. And these principles are very, very simple. The Socratic method, all it is just asking yourself questions about a certain ideology or a certain definition about something. And you're just asking yourself questions about that. You know what I mean? It's just a very simple thing to do. And it can be life-changing if you actually apply it. It's like anything else. You have to practice it and apply it. And it can be life-changing. We have it on paper. Like I said, there's studies that shows that it actually reduces recidivism by increasing moral reasoning skills and critical thinking. So we're not teaching from a book that is supposedly, you know, from God. We're teaching from, like you said, all different sources where there's empirical evidence to show that it actually helps.
And you get people to believe in their own capacities, which is a very, very empowering thing. You know, it's nice to go to sleep at night and to think, I was very productive today and I'm proud of what I did. That's a feeling that everybody likes. And when you get people to believe in themselves and to use their own mind as a tool for good and as a tool for their own growth, it really becomes, it's a very, very empowering thing. And it just makes people feel like they're, you know, connected and more in tune with what they're supposed to be doing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. One of our mottos at Saved by Reason is to think for yourself and to question authority, but mostly think for yourself. And, you know, and like you said, at the end of the day, you can rest well knowing that you went out throughout your day, you know, not believing in something just because somebody told it to you, you know, that you
right.
you actually go in and investigate yourself. And it's a great feeling. And that's,
for sure, for sure. So here's a question I have, man. So I know for you personally, one of your biggest things where you were able to grow out of that mindset, you actually found you were very moved by the new atheist books, like Richard Dawkins,
mm-hmm.
Sam Harris, I don't know if Daniel Dennett, maybe one of them, Hitchens. And that way of thinking really kind of propelled you in the right direction, where you were willing to question everything and you were willing to, you know, use your own mind and not just follow a group, essentially. So is any part of that incorporated into this new project here, or for the new project, are you focusing more broadly on just philosophical thinking, Socratic method, and mm-hmm. things like that?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. Like I said before, Dr. Peter Boghossian, who is actually going to be an advisor in August as soon as he's back from Australia, he's totally on board with Saved by Reason. He's actually the intellectual force behind us because of his book, A Manual for Creating Atheists, is exactly what we're using to teach the inmates the Socratic Method. But besides him, Sam Harris has been a huge impact on me. His last book, Waking Up, has talked about meditation and basically mindfulness and applying those principles to your life. And I'm trying to come up with a pamphlet to send to the inmates to, incorporate that into their life and jail and stuff. But just for now, we're just focusing on the Socratic method.
Okay. So the idea is now you keep it more broad, but as time goes on, you can incorporate.
Right.
Okay. That's fantastic
right.
because there's so many,
yeah,
I mean, go ahead.
We're just starting off, just to be clear about that, just so everybody knows, we just got founded in January, Incorporated, and the board was just founded, so we're just kind of taking off the ground right now, but we have a lot of people behind us, we're just getting all these things incorporated. There's going to be a whole lot more to this.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
In the future.
Just thinking for myself here, I know that mm-hmm. I read those books as well. I'm a big fan of all those books and all those authors that you laid out there. But I love
mm-hmm.
not just that. I love the atheist movement. I'm a fan of the progressive movement. I don't agree with either one completely, but obviously everybody could tell from my show there's bits and pieces of
right.
my philosophy that have been weighed in from those people. Even the libertarian movement has, you know, influenced me in some ways, and that's kind of incorporated into my philosophy as well. And for criminals who are getting reformed, I agree with you. It's good to start broad, but then as time goes by, you can incorporate more specifics, whether it's atheist books or progressive books by somebody like Tom Hartman, for example, or libertarian stuff or whatever it is. As long as we're getting people to think, and that's opening new doors for them, that's the idea, right?
Exactly. Yep. As long
right,
as
that's
we're getting
awesome.
Exactly.
So tell everybody how they can help. I know the website itself is savedbyreason.org. It's savedbyreason.org. And
yep.
Is there a place people can go if they like the idea and they want to get involved, if they want to maybe give a donation or something like that? Can you tell everybody where they can do all that stuff?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, on savedbyreason.org, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties, but here in about an hour or two, the website is going to be up. So by the time this is on YouTube, the website will be up. There'll be a support button that you can go to. And, we could really use the help towards postage and stationery, all the materials that we send to the inmates, travel expenses for the ministers. We need to file for 501c3 status with the IRS. So there's a whole lot of court fees that are involved with that. So, yeah, you can just click on support, and if you have a credit or debit card, you can donate. Anything helps. We'll have a PayPal set up soon here in a couple of days, and we really appreciate anything anybody can spare.
Awesome, man.
Really,
I must say,
it's a worthy
proud.
Cause.
Yeah, I'm really proud to be on board here. For everybody listening, just to let you know, full disclosure here, I'm on the board of this, so you know, mm-hmm. I'll be helping with ideas behind the scenes here. So, you know, I'm really excited to do that. And also, man, Josh, thanks so much, man. Seriously, you're, for people who don't know, you know, the details of your story, I know you gave a little bit here. Check out our other interview.
Right.
We did another interview with you where you really go into details and specifics about your story. Your story is absolutely mm-hmm. fascinating. It's a great story of redemption and, you know, somebody's intellect digging themselves out of a horrible situation. I love the fact that you're trying to share that with the world and give other people the same opportunity to come back that you had. Nothing but good stuff, man. I really love this idea. I'm happy to be a part of it. And thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kyle. Yeah, like you said, people can check out that interview that we did before, or they can go on our website, and it's connected to our blog, where there's a few stories from my upcoming book that I'm working on a proposal for, too, right now, if you want to hear more about my story. Thank you so much for having me, Kyle. A huge fan of the show, and I look forward to talking with you again sometime in the future.
All right. Thanks so much, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
All right, guys. That was awesome. There you have it. Josh Turner. Great idea. I give it my my full support for sure. All right. Let me squeeze in a few more here before we wrap up the show for today. Got some Pat Robertson. Got some Bill Maher. And I'm short on time, so let's jump right into it. Pat Robertson answered some viewer emails on his show, The 700 Club, yesterday, and he gave a terrible answer to a question about dead babies.
A coworker confronted me in the break room and said she can't believe in a God who let her baby of 3 years old die, suffering a long battle in and out of hospitals while he heals other children. She asked me, why did God allow my baby to die? I told her that I didn't know why her child died, but God sees the whole picture. We see only in part. What else can I say?
Well, what you have to understand, I think, you know, in the Old Testament, it was like God's responsible for everything. He brings out the bad. He brings out the good. He's responsible for everything. More and more in the New Testament era, we have come to realize that human beings have an agency, they have responsibility, and a lot of things happen because of what humans do. I mean, people die in hospitals because of medical malpractice. Somebody cuts the wrong thing and somebody dies. It happens all the time. A nurse gives a patient the wrong medicine. Well, you're going to blame that on God? That's not God. That's people who are making mistakes. Now, as far as God's concerned, he knows the end from the beginning, and he sees a little baby. And that little baby could grow up to be Adolf Hitler. He could grow up to be Joseph Stalin. He could grow up to be some serial killer. Or he could grow up to die of a hideous disease. God sees all that. And for that life to be terminated while he's a baby, he's going to be with God forever in heaven. So that isn't a bad thing.
You got to stop, man. You got to stop, you old buffoon. You just make an ass of yourself every single day on TV. Is that what a mother who lost her child wants to hear? Is that consoling? And, you know, sometimes when you make that argument, some people would say, well, it doesn't matter if it's consoling. Is it true or not? Yeah, but on that point, too, it's untrue. I like how he starts out by saying, well, you know, the idea used to be God is responsible for everything. But in the New Testament, what we learned is God's not responsible for everything. People are responsible for the bad, and God's responsible for the good. Oh, well, isn't that fucking lovely, and isn't that convenient? So whenever something good happens, thank you, God, we love you, you did the right thing. Whenever something bad happens, fuck, why did I screw up so bad? So it's a rigged game. He gets praise no matter what. So the empirical reality doesn't matter. If good happens, it's because of him. If bad happens, it's not because of him. What was he, on a fucking coffee break? What's going on here? Notice, again, it's a rigged game, which shows you that there's no logic involved here. There's no objective standards. There's no empiricism. It's just, don't think, if something bad happens, blame yourself. If something good happens, give credit to God. But then he leaves that argument, and he contradicts himself, because he says, well, actually, no, God knows everything and is omnipotent, all-knowing, is aware of all, right? And that is the standard understanding. God's aware of everything and can do anything. It's God we're talking about here. So wait, Pat, which is it? You just said God is only responsible for the good, not responsible for the bad. And then you changed it to, no, God is responsible for everything, and maybe your baby was Hitler. leave it to Pat Robertson to not only be offensive and stupid, but also within a clip that's a minute and a half long, he contradicts himself. It's beyond me how anybody in the United States of America or anywhere could still watch this guy and go, yeah, I need to get some advice. Sweet Jesus, man, you just told a grieving mother who lost her kid that maybe your kid was the next Hitler, maybe your kid was the next Stalin. So it's not bad. You know, God works in mysterious ways. If that God really does exist, if that God exists of, you know, I'm going to let a tsunami wipe out this place, I'm going to do an earthquake in that place, I'm going to, do an economic disaster, going to have extreme poverty in many pockets throughout the world, I'm going to have incredible sickness and Ebola and diseases and viruses and all these problems. If that God exists, fuck that God. That God can suck my balls right here, these balls, because that God is not moral, is not ethical. The only way you can believe that is if you say, by definition, no matter what God does, it is moral. So forget, throw out all your rules about murder being wrong and, you know, assault being wrong and all this stuff, rape being wrong. Unless you throw that paradigm out and say, whatever God says is right, that's the only way you could think that. You know, and what kind of a group of people is okay under any circumstance with those things being moral, where you flip the script and say murder is moral, rape is moral, assault is moral? Those are some backwards-thinking motherfuckers. Those are some illogical motherfuckers. And what you find is that if somebody's religious, they have to twist themselves in a pretzel to try to explain away all the bad in the world and all the bad in their holy books. Here's an idea. How about you don't try to explain away anything and you just accept the obvious reality that your God isn't real and your holy books aren't real? Sorry, not sorry at all. All right, now, let me go to Bill Maher. Bill Maher did a New Rules segment on his Friday show about how Christians in America are not under attack by liberals or by anybody else. And Sean Hannity had on Pastor Robert Jeffers to respond to Maher. This is hilarious. Check it out.
Finally, New Rule conservatives who constantly whine that Christianity is under attack from liberals have to explain why there are over 300,000 churches in the U.S., but only 400 Whole Foods. Sean Hannity says the liberal media's war against religion is alive and well. Okay, so it's more of the media thing, like my friend Ariana from the liberal Huffington Post, because she's written 3 books about faith. I really want to know, where is religion belittled in the liberal world?
All right, joining us now with Reaction, Fox News Dr. Keith Alblow, as well as Pastor, Fox News contributor, Dr. Robert Jeffers. Why don't I let you answer Maher's question? Because there are a lot of examples, and it's interesting that Christians are often attacked, but you don't see as much said about other religions.
That's right. So, look, Christians losing their business because they believe in traditional marriage, or as we heard a couple of weeks ago, a Marine being court-martialed because she has a Bible verse on her desk, this isn't imaginary, it's real. And sure, it doesn't rise to the level of having your head chopped off by ISIS in the Middle East, but it's all the same attitude that allows for those attacks, Sean. And I want to remind people that, the Nazis weren't able to take the Jews to the crematoriums immediately. The German people wouldn't have allowed for it. Instead, the Nazis had to change public opinion.
These guys are incredible. You just proved Bill Maher 100% right. His whole New Rule segment was about how Christians in America are hysterical. They think they're under attack. They think they're a victim when they are no such thing. They are in control. It is the opposite. They have the most power in the United States of America. What does this guy do? He goes out there and proves Maher completely right. He's like, oh, we are a victim. Oh, my God, we're under attack. It's like we're the Jews in Nazi Germany. How do you not realize how stupid you sound? How do you not realize how off base that is? You know what happened to Jews in Nazi Germany? They were murdered. There was a genocide. There was a Holocaust. They slapped, signs on the stores owned by Jews that said, this is a Jewish store, don't go in, don't frequent it. They got the shit beat out of them on a regular basis. They had no rights whatsoever. They were treated in the most grotesque way ever in human history. How exactly are Christians in America treated even 1/100th as badly as them? Hello, in America, as Mar pointed out rightly many times in his New Rule segment, we're 70% or more Christian. Over 90% of the American people celebrate Christmas. In America, there's a church every 4 fucking feet. What percentage of the presidents have been Christian? This narrative of Christian persecution, it's nonsense, but you know what they're really referring to, right? See, they view that they have a right to take away other people's rights, and if you stop them from taking away other people's rights, well, then you're taking away their rights. I know that was hard to follow, but the idea is, they say, unless you let me stop gays from getting married and discriminate against gays, then you're taking away my rights. No, wait. No, what you are doing is you are taking away gay rights. Nobody's taking away your rights. When they tell you, hey, you can't not marry a black person and a white person because you disagree with interracial marriage, that's not discriminating against you. That's preventing you from discriminating against them. By the same token, if you say, I don't want to marry gay people because they're gay, no, that's not discriminating against you. That's preventing you from discriminating against them when they tell you you can't do that. So everything, they flip the narrative all the time of, oh my God, we're the victim, we're under attack, we're like the Jews in Nazi Germany. Nonsense. Virtually every other group in America has it worse than the Christians do. Seriously. I mean, how do Muslims have it in America? How do, you know, to bring in races now, not just religions, but races too. How do black people have it in America? Going back to religions, how there aren't very many Buddhists, there aren't very many Hindus. Sikhs constantly get attacked because they're mistaken for Muslims in the United States of America. Again, how do atheists have it? There are states where on the law books, it's still banned for atheists to run for office. Now, those are unconstitutional, but it says something about the mindset that those laws still exist on the books. There's much more discrimination against every other group than there is against Christians. And by the way, Marr is right. This idea that the left is so anti-religion. A majority of people who are liberal Democrats in America are religious. That's a fact. Now, it is true that myself, Bill Maher, TYT, Dave Rubin, some other people, right, that we are anti-religion and on the left, and we like to talk about that. But if you look at MSNBC, if you look at CNN, if you look at the newspapers, if you look at Arianna Huffington, like Bill Maher brought up, and other people, the overwhelming majority of people on the left have dick to say about religion. They don't say anything. They're not anti-religion. I wish they were, but they're not. So this narrative of anti-religion liberals, we're under attack, we're victimized. No, and you're not even victimized by us. Because you know why? Disagreement is not victimization. When I tell you you're an idiot, and when I tell you you are factually incorrect for believing in a virgin birth, that's not me victimizing you. That's not me taking away your rights. That's me disagreeing with you. And for the record, I'm right, and you're wrong. All right, man. I'm out of time. That was a fucking awesome show today. What do you guys think? I think that show was top fucking notch. But that's all I got. So everybody, come back tomorrow, same time, same place. Much love, kisses, smooches. I got the countdown going in my ear. Time's limited. Everybody have a great night, man. You'll see all the stuff later posted on YouTube. Peace.